want you to understand how some marginalized people feel, particularly those of us who are Palestinian and Arab and or Muslims. Our existence is controversial to people. My breathing in this world, just me standing here telling you that I am Palestinian, is in of itself controversial. Let me tell you what controversial means. I speak truth to power. I challenge the status quo. My entire 25 years of my career, it has been putting my body on the line for the things that I believe in.
That's Linda Sarsour, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Linda Sarsour, A Palestinian American Speaks. It's axiomatic that anything dealing with Palestine is deemed controversial. And if it is a Palestinian-American woman speaking out, even more so. Look at the vitriol and death threats directed at Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. She's a Palestinian-American and is standing tall for her right to speak out, as is Mariam Alwan, a Palestinian-American student at Columbia. She's one of the many Students for Justice in Palestine organizers in the horizontal alliance between that campus group and Jewish Voice for Peace. There is pushback. Asna Tabassum, a first-generation American Muslim, was chosen to give in the commencement speech at USC until she was canceled after being targeted by pro-Israel groups. The sheer scale of death and destruction in Gaza and the ongoing expansion of illegal colonies and violence in the West Bank has moved the narrative. In communities and on campuses across the United States, Palestinian American women are breaking down Orientalist cliches about being meek and submissive and taking the lead in peace and justice movements. One of those voices speaking out is Linda Sarsour. She's a community organizer and racial justice activist. She's one of the most widely known Palestinian American women for her advocacy on behalf of Palestinians. She's been called every Islamophobe's worst nightmare. Her activism spans a range of interests. The New York Times says she has tackled such issues as immigration, mass incarceration, stop and frisk, and the New York City Police Department's spying operations on Muslims. She has helped organize major women's marches and Black Lives Matter protests. She's been hailed as shattering stereotypes of Muslim women. And she has told her critics, "Stop telling me to go back to my country. I'm from Brooklyn." She spoke at Colorado State University in Fort Collins in early April 2024. And now, Linda Sarsour.
Listen, folks, I'm just going to get to it because this is an important moment. I feel kind of triumphant just being and standing on the stage like this actually happened and I'm here. And I want people to understand why I came here, because I have been to over 100 universities since COVID happened. So this is not in my whole career, right? In my whole 25 years of organizing. This is just in the past few years. And I'm tired and I'm exhausted. And as you all know, I come here unapologetically Palestinian-American. And I want you to also to understand that it's the greatest honor of my life to be Palestinian. But it's also right now in this moment, I have to get up every day while my people are being genocided. I have to get up every day to work, to organize, to speak, to be my ancestors' wildest dreams manifested while my people are being slaughtered. And so I promise you, any chance I can get to say, "I'm not available, I need a little break," I will take it. But I came here because this is SWANA and Arab American Heritage Month. And I came here for SWANA and Arab American students so that they know that they are seen and that they are heard and that they should be celebrated in every college campus in this country. No student at any school should ever feel small or feel like they have to be on the sidelines or have to feel that any university gets to decide during your Heritage Month who the person is that gets to come and celebrate who you are. So I came for you. I'm used to this idea that me existing in this world. So just I want you to understand how some marginalized people feel, particularly those of us who are Palestinian and Arab and or Muslims. Our existence is controversial to people. My breathing in this world, just me standing here telling you that I am Palestinian, is in of itself controversial. And so oftentimes when people are coming to a college campus or they hear that, I'm not even gonna get into what other events are happening at your school today. We're gonna keep that conversation for another day. But me, my friends, apparently I'm controversial. Let me tell you what controversial means. I speak truth to power. I challenge the status quo. My entire 25 years of my career, it has been putting my body on the line for the things that I believe in. During COVID, I got up and did something that people in this room did for me. I got up and I fought for a woman that I did not know. I left my family in New York City during a global pandemic, and I moved to Louisville, Kentucky, a city that I had never been to before. Because I heard that a black woman got shot and killed by the Louisville Metro Police Department during a global pandemic while she was an emergency ambulance worker, EMT worker. And I said to myself in New York, what? So we're just gonna move on and allow for a black woman to get murdered in the sanctity of her own home and we're just gonna let it happen? No, my friends, I got up. I'm not a person that just says free the people or says fight for justice. I'm gonna use every tool and resource that I have at my disposal to do what I believe. And so I moved to Louisville, Kentucky for 5 months and I built with local people. And till today, I still fight for Breonna Taylor. Till today, I still fight for Breonna Taylor. I saw babies being ripped out of their mother's arms on the US-Mexico border. I didn't just sit at home in New York and say, my God, that's so terrible. Why would you take these babies from their mother's arms? I also didn't say, keep the families together. Because, you know, the people were saying, keep the family. What are you saying? Keep the families together in the same in detention centers? I said, free the people. I went to the US-Mexico border. I visited those detention centers. I mobilized. I organized. I'm a person that gets up and does something about the things that I believe in. After the election of Donald Trump back in 2016, I didn't just sit home and be mad about it. I didn't sit home and cry about it. Through my trauma as a Muslim American, knowing that a man just won an entire election almost on the demonization of the communities that I come from, I got up and organized. I stood up against fierce opposition, violent white supremacists across this country, death threats to my life, to my family, people who put my home address on the internet. And everywhere that I went could have been my last day. But I wasn't just fighting for me. I was fighting for marginalized people all across this country. Because in every generation, there has to be some people that decide to say, I'm ready to risk it all. And I'm one of those people. So what makes me controversial is that I dismantle a lot of stereotypes about the communities that I come from. People were looking at me saying, this whole thing don't make sense to me. I keep telling them I'm from Brooklyn, that's part of it. This is just how we do in Brooklyn. I can't help it. And I happen to also be Palestinian, so the blood that runs through my vein is the blood of an oppressed people. And so that liberation, that fight, that quest for liberation, just something that moves me every day. And so for 25 years, they kept telling me, you're too much. You talk too much. You're a troublemaker. And I say to people, let me ask you a question. Do you think Dolores Huerta is a troublemaker? Do you think Rosa Parks was a troublemaker? Do you think Dr. Martin Luther King was a troublemaker? How about Malcolm X? Think about all the people in the different communities that you come from who fight for freedom and fight for justice and fight for liberation, and explain to me whether you think that they're troublemakers. Troublemakers are people that ruffle feathers, people that challenge you in moments of despair and devastation. I often ask people, when you see me, a person that is like me, who is Muslim, who is Arab American, who is Palestinian, witnessing an entire genocide of my people right now. This is not a figment of my imagination. This is not an opinion that I have. 40,000 plus people have been slaughtered in the last 6 months. There are children who are experiencing forced starvation, and I went to Egypt. Not somebody told me, not I saw it in a video. I went myself during the holiday season when many of you were spending time with those that you love. I was in Egypt. I saw 1,500 trucks right outside the border. So I want you to imagine that if you're a Palestinian in Gaza and Rafah, you could look through the border and see all the aid, but you're inside starving. You're inside without food. So I just want to understand from people, what am I supposed to feel? And what am I supposed to say? And how am I supposed to act when there is a forced starvation of a people, when there is an abundance of food and resources that can get into them? The food is there. The money is there. The resources are there. And there are children that are literally dying a slow death of starvation right now. And they're not just metaphorically my people, right? Because in the movement, you all my people. All of you are my people. I'll fight for each and every one of you. You're all my people. These people happen to be literally my people. They're my family. They're the people that I love. They're the people that I share blood with. And so I hope that you expect us to be outraged. I hope that you expect that the same Linda Sarsour who's going to stand up to a police chief in a police department that murders a Breonna Taylor or murders a George Floyd, or murders an Eric Garner. We could sit here for days and name everybody. The same Linda Sarsour that will stand up against any president of the United States of America, that will stand up against any mayor or anyone in power who harms marginalized people, is going to be the same Linda Sarsour who's going to criticize the state of Israel, who is oppressing and bombarding and massacring my people. See how that all connects? See how that all is consistent? See how that all makes sense? And so I say that not really to you, but to our students, to our Arab American and Palestinian students who are afraid to speak up. And I came here to say to them, we want to battle together. Because I came here to stand up to for you to say what you feel. Stand up for your people. Do not allow people to silence you and silence your pain and silence your trauma and your quest for liberation for your people. Black people should be able to stand tall and fight for black people and fight for the communities that they come from. Anybody in this room should be able to do that. But when we need courage, and we need people who are going to give off courage, and that's what I do because that's what I have. I'm not afraid, and I'm not going to be silenced. And I'm not going to be intimidated. And here's what I'm going to tell you. It's been almost, 57, 58 years since the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. And everybody will tell you, Dr. Martin Luther King, what a great man. What a wonderful man. He was such a good man. Everybody commemorates Dr. Martin Luther King. I'm sure they do events, MLK week at your school or MLK days or whatever you do. And everybody is like, Dr. King is the best thing that ever happened. Anywhere from the right wing all the way to the end of the left, and everybody in between. How is it possible that Dr. King appealed to all the whole political spectrum? How is that possible? It's not, because it wasn't actually the context that Dr. Martin Luther King was organizing in back in the 1950s and 60s. In fact, 66% of Americans at that time did not agree with Dr. Martin Luther King. And if Dr. Martin Luther King was such a good, peaceful man, why did he get assassinated? Why did they firebomb his homes? Why did they threaten his life? He was such in a space of anxiety in the last 18 months before he was assassinated that he foresaw his assassination. When he got up in his last speech and said to you, "I see the promised land, but I might not get there with you." Why not? He was a young man. He was only in his 30s. Why did he believe that he wasn't going to see the promised land? Because he knew his time was up. That he got to the point that they were just going to give him, this was his threshold. Once you go above the threshold that society wants to give you, it's trouble for you. So he knew that. But then 57 years later, we're all commemorating Dr. Martin Luther King. We forget that Dr. King was labeled the most dangerous man in America by the FBI director at the time, J. Edgar Hoover. They infiltrated the organizations that Dr. Martin Luther King organized in and was a part of. You watched you've all studied Black history. They brought the dogs out. They bought the water hoses out. They bought the clubs out. When the people got up to organize for things as fundamental as voting rights. And here we are, decades later, still fighting for voting rights in the United States of America. So my point is that 40 years from now, I already know how history works. I've studied it too much to know what the cycle's gonna be. 40 years from now, someone's gonna say, "Oh, Linda Sarsour, she spoke at my university." Right? And even the ones that didn't want me to be at your university are going to act like they were with you when I came to your college camp, because that's what they do now. I know how this plays out. We demonize and criminalize people, and then we want to give them their flowers when they're no longer here. I'm getting my flowers now. I'm getting my flowers while I'm here, just so you all know. You know, we live in this very interesting country. And I was a little taken aback by apparently the theme this year is democracy. My mind is blown, just so you know. My mind is blown. And then did you notice when you walked in here? Was it just me? Because I might just be triggered by myself. There's a whole green sign that is as tall as you and me that says something about free speech. I don't know if, I'm not sure what's happening. So we have a sign that says free speech, and then we have a theme that is democracy. Let me explain, maybe we're not on the same page. Democracy is about being in a free society with free exchange of ideas. That we all can be across the political spectrum, and we all have an opportunity to share what we believe. That's my understanding. Democracy is the system in which we all get to participate. I don't know if somebody wants to correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I just read a different book. That's what it means. So in a theme where there's democracy, during an Arab American Heritage Month, a SWANA month, why are we in a situation having to understand why we're having a whole journey? I spent more time talking about this event than anything that I've organized in my whole entire, I can't believe that I'm even here right now. But I'm glad I am. You know why? Because there's people in this room that did something. There are people in this room that I don't even know. And some of them I just met today. If you remember when Bernie Sanders was running in 2020, he had a new mantra. You know, every time he ran, he got some new thing going on. In 2020, there was something profound that he said that people latched on to, and it was really something that meant a lot to me. And I said, "Oh my God," I said, "Bernie, I'm stealing that one, because that's a good one." Bernie asked us a question, and this is what happened here at this university. Bernie said, "Are you willing to fight for someone that you do not know?" That's what he said. And so there were people at this school, students at this school, who never met me personally, who don't know who I am, or maybe they know of me, but they don't know me, who were willing to fight for someone that they did not know. And that's the kind of joy that I felt knowing that. And then I got to meet some of them in person today. And I want you to know that you are what gives me hope in this country. You are the potential of these United States of America. The most powerful form of fighting for justice is when you are willing to fight for someone that is not like you, that is not of you. And that's what we need in this country. I've said this many times before. We have to make a distinction between vehemently disagreeing with someone, right? Because that's a thing. Even people who are my people, we're going to disagree. Because that's life, my friends. We're going to disagree. There's a difference between you disagreeing with me and claiming that my existence and presence makes you unsafe. Come on, my friends. We could do better than that. We could do better than that. We can do better than that. Sometimes I want people to reflect around this concept of safety, because there are real people who actually are unsafe. There are real threats to safety in the communities that we come from as different types of marginalized people. I mean, this event is part of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. There's real violence in our communities. There's real Islamophobia. There's real anti-Semitism. There's real homophobia. There's real ableism. There's real, like, harm, my friends, that is happening. And so if we start saying, for example, the Linda Sarsours of the world are what is making you unsafe, we're in big trouble. Because I promise you that when things get hard in this country, when things get ugly in this country, when people are getting harmed in this country, the people that you will see on the front lines will be people like Linda Sarsour. And so that's what we did. So you could disagree. I'm not telling you that I need you to come along with me on my journey and my ideological journey. I'm saying to you, respect my experiences. Respect my identities. Respect my histories that I come from. And that is what I want you to do for your SWANA and Arab American students on your college campus. We are hurting. Noura came up here. Did folks realize that Noura is Palestinian? And I met other Palestinians on this college campus. So you think that it's normal for Palestinian students to just get up every morning, go to class, submit their assignments, and act like it's any regular old day? Her people are being slaughtered. She's a young person trying to understand, why does this world not value the life and sanctity of life of Palestinians? That people can see children starving to death, and our country has no control or claims to not have control, when we know they have all the influence to stop the horror that is happening right now. So I want you to look over sometimes at your fellow Arab American and SWANA and Muslim students. SWANA stands for, someone can help me here, because I have, that's a new one for me, because we are evolving to include more people. Basically, it's Southwest Asian, North Africans, Arab American heritage is another, other people say MENA, which is Middle East, North Africa, but you get the point of what this particular group, and this group is, could be Christian, Druze, Muslims, Jews, we are not a monolithic community, but there are things that we share, and a lot of what we're sharing right now is a lot of grief. I'm grieving, my friends, like I'm grieving, like yes, I'm here with my back straight, and I'm standing up for what I believe in and who I am, but I'm hurt. I feel harmed in this world. I want to know why. I get to sit every day and watch video after video after video of blown up bodies of mothers crying over their children, and then I'm the one that's controversial. It really is something. And there's a root cause here, my friends. Sometimes we have to question the things that we believe. What makes me controversial? It really is because I'm Palestinian. That's part of it. And it's also because I have the audacity to speak up, and I'm going to tell you why. My Palestinian immigrant parents chose to immigrate to this country. That's a choice that my parents made. My parents did not want to raise their children under a military occupation. And for any of you who are in this room who are parents yourselves, or those of you who even know your own parents, I'm sure many of you would agree that your parents would do anything for you and sacrifice everything for you. And so that's what my parents did. They left their parents in Palestine. They left their grandparents, their siblings, their neighborhoods, everything that they loved, because they rejected the idea that they were going to bear children under a military occupation. So when my father had the opportunity to immigrate in the land of the free, right, in the land where we apparently could be whoever we wanted and worship the way we wanted, my father said, that's where I'm taking my children. He could have went anywhere else. He could have went to a different Arab country. He could have went to Kuwait. He could have went to Lebanon. He could have went to Iraq. He could have went anywhere. But no, my dad said, I'm going to this place called the United States of America, because that's where I know my children will thrive and get the types of things that we would never imagine getting under a military occupation in Palestine. So when you ask yourself, why is Linda Sarsour this way? It's because I'm going to make my parents' sacrifices and journey to this country worth it. That's why. I am going to honor the sacrifices of my parents and my grandparents and great-grandparents who gave up those that they loved so that they could come to this new land and get the opportunities so that we can look back. Because remember, right? Sankofa. You got to look back, my friends. A lot of us here are either immigrants or children of immigrants or great-grandchildren of immigrants, or can trace our ancestry back, even if you're tracing it back to enslaved African people. People sacrificed for us to be here. Every privilege that you engage in today, whether you have voting rights, whether you are engaging in access to healthcare, reproductive healthcare, there's so many things, even access to higher education, somebody sacrificed for you. My parents don't have college degrees. My father has a fifth grade education. My mother also didn't finish high school. She actually was in her last year of high school when they started arresting people in Palestine, and my grandfather had to pull her out of school because he said that if they get arrested, they would have to pay a 5,000 shekel kind of like bail. And my grandfather whispered to my mother and said, listen, if that happens, we can't afford it, my sister. We can't. I can't have you in that situation. So when my mother only had 5 months left of school to finish, she dropped out of high school. And so everything that I do, everything that I strive for is to honor the sacrifices of my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents. And I hope that you, as you're accessing higher education, as you are trying to be the best that you can be, you are honoring the sacrifices of people that came before you. And I wouldn't be an organizer if I didn't tell you to do some things. You know, we were talking right now about democracy. My friends, we are in trouble in this country. And I keep telling people all politics is local. And we have a lot of apathy in this country. A lot of people say, oh, I don't voting. Let me tell you about voting for me. Voting is sacrilegious to me. Something it means a lot to me. It's not about the people you're voting for. It's about the act. You know, when I go to the polls to vote, you might think this is deep, but this is how I think. I have two thoughts when I'm walking to a polling site. One is, somebody shed blood for me to do this. And I'm every step I take into a polling site, I am honoring the sacrifices of those before me that gave me the opportunity to participate in this democracy. So that's the first thought that I have. The second thought I have is, it ain't about me. It ain't about you all the time. Because a lot of time people in this country participate in democracy from a very self-righteous place. You know why? Because the United States culture teaches you to be self-righteous. It teaches you individualism. I don't come from a culture of individualism. I come from it takes a village. I come from community. So when I go to the polls and I look at, I say to myself, I don't like any of these people. That's what I say. That's the first thought I get. But then I go to my second thought, which is a question that I ask myself. Which one of these people is going to be the least harmful to marginalized people in this country? That's what I ask myself. Because it ain't about me. I might be just fine. Some of you might be just fine, but there are other people that are not going to be fine. And it is our responsibility to, at least if we are in the privilege and place and role, to reduce harm or alleviate some harm, even if it's a little harm, you better believe I'm going to do whatever it takes.